Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. Get more tips, strategies, and free downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. I've got a special guest today, and that is Charles Antis from Antis Roofing down in Southern California. Sunny California, where we put roofs on for shade. Charles is going to be the keynote speaker down at the Best of Success Conference down in Miami here coming up in September 15th through the 17th. That's put on by Roofer Magazine. It's a great show, and everybody should check this out. Great group of people, good opportunity for networking, learn a lot of good speakers. But today we're going to get into what that keynote is all about and what makes Antis Roofing so successful, because they've got a totally different twist on building their success. And this is a real interesting company. We can all learn a lot from Charles and the way that this business is set up. Very impressed and really have a great conversation that everybody's going to want to check out. And also, if you can't make it down to Miami for this conference, you can get some of these talks on demand. And I know Charles's keynote is one of those that you can listen to. And they're free. Go to roofingcontractor.com, I think it is. But it's Roofing Contractor Magazine and Best of Success 2019. Check that out. Sign up for it. Make sure you sign up for the magazine. It's free. Great magazine, gives you all the updates on what's going on in the industry, and you can learn a lot. So check that out. And a couple other things going on here this week. I've got a quick course going on, comes out every Wednesday on the same feed as The Roofer Show. And what we're doing this week is a four-part course on how to get more leads, more qualified leads using PPC or pay-per-click. And this is a course that I did with Mark Levesque at WebRunner Media. He's been on the show a few times. He's a real expert when it comes to marketing and getting leads for contractors. That's all he does, works for contractors. And it's some great information. These are short courses. It's broken up into four parts. They're about, 10, 15 minutes each. But you can really get some good information quickly. And this is why you want to subscribe to the show, to The Roofer Show. Go to iTunes, subscribe, because I've got some other information that comes out, same feed. We get these Wednesday shows, these quick tips. You'll get those, and that way you won't miss anything as they're coming out. So be sure to subscribe. And if you like those, let me know. Give me some feedback. Best way is just shoot me a text, 510-612-1450. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of the course. If you like these, I'm going to put out some more of them. But I've had a lot of requests, a lot of interest in these. I think it's going to go really well. And I'm getting a lot of feedback, and I really appreciate that. Texting, love it. We should be using more texting. It's quick, easy, and you will get a response from your prospects where phone calls, not going to be returned. Emails, no way. So use texts and shoot me a text. Let me know what you think. But feedback is the breakfast of champions. You need to be curious. Be curious what your employees have to say. Get feedback. Get feedback from your customers with reviews, with surveys. You want to know what's going on. Don't stick your head in the sand like so many contractors do. Let me know. I want it with the good and the bad and the ugly. As I've talked about on the shows before, I'm doing one-on-one coaching now. I've had a lot of requests for that and just love it. Just jump on Zoom for 45 minutes to an hour, maybe once a week, once every twice every month. But it's been going great, and it's really helping these contractors. It's helping me loving what I'm doing. So if you're interested in that, check it out. Give me a buzz or just click the button on my contact page and that'll go to my calendar. We'll set up a free call. And these are great. I've really enjoyed these also, which are just business strategy sessions. 45 minutes or so, we get on the phone, we talk about what's going on in your business. And I think I've been able to really help these contractors with some good ideas or just get some thoughts going. And that's what it's all about. But what I want to do each week is just cover one or two items of topics, strategies that I'm coming up. We're working with some of these contractors that I'm coaching. And it's really interesting. I think we all have the same problems. I know that I did when I was building my company. So it's just something that's another set of eyes, some other ideas coming from somebody who's been there and done it. So hopefully you don't have to make the same mistakes that I did. And the first one is, I see this with so many contractors, almost all the contractors that I start working with. They want to grow their business. They want to get into commercial. They've always done residential. Now I want to get into the commercial business. I want to grow. I want more sales. So when I ask them, why do you want more sales? Or why would you want to go into a new business? You know, you've got to have a reason why you do, because it's all about profitability. It's not about sales. And this is what's so hard to get across. Everybody wants to be the biggest and baddest. They all want to be on that top roofer 100 list or whatever. Before you grow your business, you've got to be profitable in the way that you're doing it. And too many contractors just want to keep growing. They think they're going to make it up in sales, and that is not how it works. You will just go out of business faster. This is a margin-sensitive business we are all in. We're not selling carpets here. This is a different business. You have to work on margin. And as the old saying goes, sales are vanity. Profit is sanity. Don't worry so much about growing your business and making all these sales. I don't understand that. Why wouldn't you want to do half the amount of work requiring half the amount of employees, because it's so hard to find employees? So rather than just trying to throw people out there, scale it back, work on your margins, do half the work, make more money. It's not that difficult. But I do have a hell of a time getting my contractors to focus on that one point. And a couple of guys this week, what I've been working on is their close rate is just too low. They're selling 1 out of 5 deals. And so we've got to take a look at what's going on. One, you're either attracting the wrong type of leads, wrong type of prospects, and you've got to identify your ideal prospect, who you want to work with, who's the most profitable, and focus on those. And there's ways, and then we just go get those people. That could be one of the problems. The other problem could be is that you're not very good at sales, but that can be taught. We need to get a better sales process and make it easier so you're closing more deals. You don't want to have, if you're closing 4 out of 5, your prices are too cheap. You need to raise your rates. So to get something in the middle there where we're able to close our deals, we still get a good close, but we're charging a high price. We want to be higher than them. We don't care what our competitors are doing. We need to know where we are to make a good profit so we don't have to do so much volume and have so much risk. And the second and last point I want to make about the coaching is I've looked at a lot of websites, contractor websites, and most of them really suck. And you got to take a look at your website and really understand what your website is trying to do. You've got 3 seconds to tell that visitor what it is exactly that you do and that they are in the right place. You're not going to do that by throwing up a bunch of stock photos of some comp roof out of some track housing. It doesn't mean anything. So that's the first thing, is making sure that homepage is set up to convert visitors to go to the next page, and then the next page, and then take an action, whether it's fill out your form, give you a call. But I'm seeing way too many websites that just, they don't say anything. They all look the same. And with this interview with Charles today, he's got a great website, and we talk about that and what makes it different. And what it really is to me is that he's got photos of his people. These are the guys that are going to be on your roof doing your work. And he builds that trust by having his guys up there. These are the people that prospects want to connect with. It's a great site. And so we're going to talk about that. But it's all about conversion. It's not about having something that looks pretty. And you've got to track that. And conversion is all that matters. And real quick, I want to give a shout out to my sponsor for the show, and that's Ruby Receptionists. These guys are great. You should check them out. What they are is virtual receptionists. They answer the phone. They answer it quickly, professionally, in a friendly voice. They can answer the questions that your prospects have, and they will tee up that sale. They've got a great app that you can use to hold your calls, have them text messages, have them forward the call straight in. This thing is worth checking out. And who it's for and what they can do for you is, for that small contractor, maybe those calls are coming into your cell phone. You're out at the job, you're trying to close a deal, you're distracted, you don't leave a good first impression, and that's what it's all about. For the mid-sized guy, maybe they're rolling over into voicemail or one of those crappy answering services. Those prospects will not leave a message. We know that. They're just going to go to the next person where they can get a live receptionist, somebody they can talk to get the answers that they're looking for. And that money you just spent to get that phone to ring, it just went in the trash. And for the larger company, maybe you've got a full-time receptionist, front desk, Ruby can save you a ton of money over a full-time receptionist. They don't call in sick. They don't take vacations. They do a great job. And the contractors that I work with, this is one of the first things that I do in helping them sell more roofs, is setting it up with Ruby, making sure that they've got a good receptionist, good customer service where that phone is going to get answered professionally. So check them out at callruby.com/roofershow, and you can get a $50 promo there off the first month's service, and there's a 21-day guarantee, money-back guarantee, so there is no risk to try out this service. So check it out, see if it's something that'll work for you. Okay, well, let's get into our interview with Charles Antis. Charles, thanks for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited, Dave. Let's do this.
Well, I've been following you on LinkedIn for quite a while. And by the way, all our listeners should be on LinkedIn. And this is something that's important and a great way to stay connected. It's just not about looking for jobs and so forth. But be sure you connect with me. Connect with Charles. Check it out. There's some great stuff if you need help with your profile. Call me up, because that's really important. But as I was saying, I am really involved with LinkedIn. And the first thing I did this morning, I go to LinkedIn because I post things and see what's going on. And the first thing, here's your handsome face pops up, and you have this great message. And I just want to play that.
Hi, I'm Charles Antis. I'm founder and CEO here at Antis Roofing and Waterproofing. What is my favorite part about working in the roofing industry? And that is easy. I can tell you, hands down, it is the people. The people in the roofing industry have the biggest hearts and the broadest shoulders, because we keep families safe and dry across the country.
Yeah, so I love that post. These are some of the things that I want to talk to you about today, because you post a lot of content out there almost every day, and I never see really anything talking about your business, how great you are, how you're the biggest, baddest, best, like everybody else is doing out there. You have a different tact. And I want to get into that because it's really interesting. But first, if we can step back, we talk about elevator pitches on this show a lot. And Charles, can you give us your pitch about who you are, what you do, who you help, what makes you different? Can you give us a little shot on that?
Yeah. Yes, I'll try. We are a roofing company that is in Southern California, location-wise, Irvine, right by the Orange County Airport. And we cater to the HOA industry. So if you live in a condo and you vote for your roofing as a whole, all 200 of your units, then we bid on and we repair and maintain and replace your roofs all the way from San Diego to LA. And that's all we do. And we're fantastic at it. There's my big bravado on the roof. But if I really go to who we are, the reason we're fantastic at it is because we have purpose. We know why we exist from top to bottom. And we all have a story that puts us under this umbrella where we're a company that exists to keep families safe and dry. And we'll probably talk about a lot how we got to that motto. Right now, we're in our 30th year, and our logo this year, we changed it from saying Antis Roofing and Waterproofing to saying Antis, 30 years keeping families safe and dry. And that's, I think, having that purpose and knowing our why is critically important for us installing that quality roof.
Well, Charles, I love it. And one of the things that I like to do when I have a contractor on is I always go back and check out their website, see what they're all about, so forth. I'm looking at your website now at antisroofing.com. And all our listeners should check this out because this is an example of a great website. The reason is it's very clear on what you do. And it's not a bunch of photos, stock photos of comp roofs, all that mean nothing to anybody as a buyer of home services. But it is clear here, and as you say, Antis, 30 years, keeping families safe and dry. I love that. Tells you exactly what you do. And just going through this, it is really a great site. Makes it clear. So what I like about it is you have so many photos of your people, your employees. And I'm looking through this, you've got, what we do, which is really clear. You do, associations, something that we never did, but as one area that we really stayed away from in our business.
Oh, I know why. Yeah,
exactly. So you've obviously figured out how to do it and do it profitably without getting sued and without going through all the other stuff. So, and then you've got your story talks about that, but it also talks about really the feel that I get from this website is all about your people and your employees. And that really comes through. And I think that's what homeowners or business owners want to see these days. They want to see something different where these are the guys that are going to be out there installing my roof. And that's what they want to see. And that's what I love about this site. What were you thinking when you were designing this? Am I on the right track here?
Yeah. So I have a lot of quick principles I'll throw at you. First of all, I'm not an expert on sociology, why people do what they do in groups and in masses, but I'm a tinkerer and a philosopher. So, first off, I'd say we follow a couple principles that are really, really important. And the first is we really focus on neuromessaging. Neuromessaging is not what you're reading that you think, that's really intelligent. It's that connection to your animal brain. So nothing shows that more than that photo of that friendly actual photo of one of our employees up on a roof, or the simple messaging. Our logo is clean. It's crisp. It's almost as simple as a Nike swoosh. That means that people can take that with them in their emotional memory better. And it's hard to explain why. I'm not good at explaining why, but that's directionally accurate data. So the other principle that you see in our website is this principle of inclusivity in messaging. So in messaging, this sounds really weird to a lot of you, but I'm asking for you to trust me, and I can't explain why it's true. But my wife always uses this expression. She says, everything happens for a reason. And I think it's a great expression. I think it's true. However, I used to say the same thing differently. I used to say, nothing happens by accident. Now, those two statements sound relatively the same, don't they, to you, Dave? Mm-hmm. But the first is entirely different in the way it affects your animal brain, your fight, flight or flight brain. And so there's power in having the language of inclusivity. So never have a no or a gimmick or anything that's negative or a negative picture in your space, unless it's followed by an immediate solving picture, the picture of the clean house opposed to the leaky house. So there's simple messaging and the use of some, we're not overpowering it. If you go to our website 10 years ago, you'd see words, 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 but it's a faster right. world. People don't read on their PC. You have to look at, people see everything. They get all of their content while standing in a crowded line at Starbucks. Exactly. I didn't make that up. I learned it from one of the most successful corporate social responsibility, the editor of Atlantic Magazine, who has millions of viral tweets with millions of likes. So it's we're catering to, the only thing I'm not satisfied with our website is, and maybe because we have so much, is it's not fast enough. It also needs to be fast in this age. And yeah. as I told you on our intake call, I appreciate the compliments, but I want it to be faster because people are moving so quick. And those people that would decide who you are, not only your clients, but other stakeholders that end up protecting you quietly in the community, how you show up to them really matters.
I totally agree. And they want to see something quick. They want to see images. They want to see, they're making those decisions very quickly. Yeah. And you're so right about having that great experience from your phone, which is really important. That's why you don't want to have a lot of text. And that's why I really like this website. I mean, it just gives you a good feel, a clear feel of what's going on. And here's a company that I feel that I can trust. Now, I'm skipping over to the careers section because we all know that our number one problem that we all face in this industry is the lack of qualified workforce. I know that you've done a great job. You have, I don't know what, a 90% retention rate of your people, I've heard. You're obviously doing something right. And I'm looking at this page. It gives you a clear picture that if I was looking, you know, and the way that it happens is you get pissed off at the job that you're at because you're not being treated with respect. Here you are busting your ass and there's no appreciation, right? So here I am. I'm looking around. I come to your website on the career section. Here's a company that I would like to be part of. Charles, what were you thinking when you developed this?
Well, so I think that it's an evolution. It's in one of those things. Like, I think anything that's successful today, don't stand pat. You have to be super nimble. I mean, people are going to come in and revolutionize roofing. So in this case, I think we're learning, and we try to attract talent with the website, and I'll get to that more. But really what I've learned, and I've learned this through deep studies by the NRCA, of which I'm a board member, the National Roofing Contractors Association, that really across the country, especially with the Latin workforce, which most of us that's most of our workforce in the country in roofing, that the only real proven success is by word of mouth through family, because there's so many connections through family. And there's such a, I think immigrants and first generations have such a trust issue. So it's really word of mouth. And so if word of mouth is the number one way, I believe the best way that I know how to find success in recruiting on getting the opportunity is going to be through but rewarding word of mouth. So I know we had internal documents recently. We just doubled our amount, at least right for now, because we need to hire more to fill the work that we have. And I believe we're going to be able to do so because we have two things. We have those connections and we treat our people really well and word gets around, but also because we have a solid brand that spills out in our community and kind of shows up. It shows up from a nonprofit over to a restaurant where maybe one of the wives of one of the workers work, and the wife helps the husband feel more comfortable about staying here at Antis. And so there's a lot of deeper stuff that we're trying to build in the HR. Like, we at Antis Roofing have an aguinaldo, which is a Mexican tradition of if we can, giving as much as an extra month's salary around Christmas time, which we're able to do 2 years ago when we had a lot of rain. And this year we're hoping to be able to do something similar. So it's really understanding the culture and the people. And so I really love the heritage of my Latin labor force. So we study it. I found out 5 years ago that most of our guys are Mexican and they grew up on a ranch in central Mexico. And I found that by taking them all to breakfast and talking to them, and their stories were similar. And I found out that I kind of got into that. Why is the thing with the bull, or define respect for me? And these men define respect, not in the way that we think it's like a chip on your shoulder, but I listened to one man after another explain that when he grew up on a ranch, before he would go to school, his father would wake him up at 3 to 4 a.m. and he would say, "Hey, Narciso, he didn't say get up and go to work. He said, "Narciso, will you go out and work with me a couple hours on the farm before you go to school?" And that was the respect and that's the honor of the system they came from. And I understood that. And then I was able to understand that they had this great lore of the white wolf, the lobo, because it's nearly extinct. It's no longer taking their sheep and their cattle. And so we created Lobo Awards so we could really reward those traits, like Leader of the Pack Award, these traits that these men have in a reference that we both could understand. So to me, I think that I've been able to, last night, I'm going to tell you about last night. I'm so excited. We were asked to enter a nonprofit soccer tournament. And for 30 years, I've always wanted to have a soccer team, but I didn't know if we could support it or have the interest. And we had 30 volunteers and we did really well in the soccer tournament. And it was so cool to see my guys on the field with these, you know, computer tech guys from Europe playing and high-fiving after the game. But last night we played our first league game, an Irvine League play. And it was like so cool because these guys, who some of them were immigrants and they haven't always felt safe. I mean, if you could have heard at halftime where my marketing manager and my VP of sales and I, we were listening, and there was this chirping and chatter of giggling and happiness. And one of my guys that's worked for me for almost 20 years, he came over and he goes, "You know, it's like right now on the field, we don't think of anything other than this moment and how great it is." And after the game, they throw those high fives. And that's what we have to try to get to. We have to see our people as every bit of human as they are. And I can't believe the story of so many people, almost every man I've ever hired in the roofing business. And I can't believe this is true of our trade that I love so much, but there's some of us out there that don't rep it so well. And that's why those of us listening, we have to rep it well, because almost every man that is an immigrant that's ever worked for me has a story of being stiffed, working without pay for a week or a month or longer. And I think that, you know, we have a real opportunity to lift our trade and lift it from these big, strong superheroes, those guys that are up on the roof. And that's something that I try to do. I try to humanize this trade because I used to be ashamed of it, Dave. I used to be, you know, I talk about this a lot. I used to put my hands in my pocket and try to come up with what I would say that I would be respected. And I would tell people, like, I'm a roofer. Yeah, the second I would brag almost about how I don't have a good job. And then I somehow along the way learned that, no, I have a great job. I have a trade. It's always going to be there. And I'm the one who goes out there in that storm. And my guys are the techs that go out there when no one else will go. And they will go up on that roof. They will solve it. And they will keep you safe and dry. Everything in this country that we love, everything in this country that we want, that we want to care for, we protect it. And I love to see this swelling up of healthy pride in the industry, which I feel from coast to coast as a member of the NRCA. So I got on my soapbox a little bit there, but that was a good question. Thanks.
I feel exactly the same way. In my business, we did a lot of similar things. We also had 100% Hispanic workforce out here in California. I had the greatest people, and we had a great retention rate. But you've got to, as you say, treat them in a human way, in a respectful way, because these guys really are kicking ass. This is a tough job, and they just need to be shown appreciation and respect, and this is where so many contractors fail. And then
I have to be authentic in the moment. I do not give myself a passing grade there yet. I have to say, I do not give myself a passing grade there yet. When I look at the men in the field, you know, so many times our company, we get a lot of accolades for all the good that we do. And it means a lot to me. But some of the accolades we get for our culture, I'm telling you, we haven't built it all the way. And until you live in the neighborhoods where these people live, you know, I think that we have to keep trying. And what I love is I belong to a group like the NRCA, like the Roofing Alliance, and other trade organizations that truly are trying to build all the way to build the bridge all the way to everybody, no matter what. So it's a good time. It's a really good time to be an active member and an NRCA member in the roofing industry.
Well, it's interesting. I've been in this business for 30 plus years, and I worked with my father, who was in the business forever, and it's always been the same complaint. This is not a new issue, which is, there's just no good people out there. And there are, and there's a ton of them, but you have to attract them, and the way to do that is exactly what you say, is to have a great reputation. Word of mouth is where your guys are going to come from, because when they go into that bar or whatever and they say, God, my job sucks, I can't stand working for these guys. Oh, hey, I love my job. We've got a great organization, and people want to be part of something. They want to be involved with a company that's going somewhere, that has a career path for them. And you really just have to take the time, as you say, to get to know the guys and do these type of things. We always had a big carnival every spring. We would have them invite their friends also, which just happened to be other roofers, right? And they would bring their kids, their wives, give out prizes. And once those kids start loving this business, once the wives are going, God, this is a great business, our kids love it, that's when things really start to happen. And that was really our most successful program for retaining our employees. And that really worked well for us.
Yeah, I love that. We've done the same thing, carnivals with bull rides and steer roping contest and tickets to Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm. Yeah, we're going to do something similar. We're actually going to have our company party, I think, next month in Knott's Berry Farm, and we're pretty excited about that.
I love it. So those are great things for our listeners. There are good people out there, but you've got to work this. This is our number one asset. So put the effort and the time and the thought to show appreciation for our guys that are out there just kicking ass. Charles, this is a good segue into really what I wanted to talk about, which what I see is really what makes your company different. As I said, I've been following you on LinkedIn. I never see you out there pitching your company like everybody else does. You know, it's all about me, all about me. What you do is unique. And what I like about following you on LinkedIn and talking with you and getting to know you better is that you are really involved in your community and taking the bull by the horns as far as charitable events and really giving back. Let's talk about that a bit. What can you tell me, and what is that all about?
You know, it's so weird how life is. I never had a business plan to do any of this. It was just life happening. You know, it's like we talked briefly before about how the business started, and it was sort of born out of that. My business started because I had taken a summer job. I grew up Mormon. I'm no longer Mormon, so that makes me a foreman. But I, when you're Mormon, you grow up, you go on a mission, and you go to BYU. You know, when I went, so I went on a mission to Thailand, which was a great experience because it was like a Peace Corps type mission, and I got to learn about service over there. But I came back, and I was recruited like all underclassmen are at BYU, because they just had 2 years sales experience knocking on doors around the world. So I was recruited to go sell in Southern California, and I was selling something that was partnered with the SoCal Gas Company, so we said. And, you know, I started selling, and I sold for a while until one day I went to pick up a check from a homeowner that was a really nice family. In fact, they were deaf, and I was right communicating with them. I went back to like pick up a check from this deaf family, and the neighbor met me at the door and said, "How dare you? Get away. You tried to rip them off, and you promised them they were going to save this and their electricity, and it's impossible." And I looked at what she said, and I thought, well, damn, I think she's right. So I quit. I quit that day, and I looked for a job. Here I was in Southern California. I had a little money owed to me, but I didn't have any cash. I had a wrecked car because I'd wrecked it And I was just, I was like, what am I going to do? And the only job I could find was working for a roofing company. And that's how I started in roofing, because I grew up in Oregon as a laborer, working in the woods, working in the lumber mills. And labor was something that I knew I could stand up next to the next guy with. And so I got a job and was tearing off roofs, and I was out in the hot sun, and it was really hard. But I stuck with it until I learned I had a skill eventually, and that was I like to sniff out leaks. Anything that would leak from rain, it became something that I could do. So when one day when it turned out there wasn't enough work at this company, I realized maybe I had a skill and I had a couple side jobs where I could go ahead and have a better trail of income solving these leaks. And so not with a business plan, but with not enough work in the company I was working in, I hung a shingle up, you know, and it was, I needed every job. I needed every phone call. And I got about two or three phone calls a week. And in fact, those phone calls are so important that my job, one of those early weeks, was putting weather stripping on that bedroom door that I converted into an office, so they wouldn't be able to hear my daughter crying if I got a phone call. And not long after that, I got a phone call one week, and I got a phone call from a lady who said she had leaks. She had leaks in every room. And to me, that's like a golden call. I mean, I had a mortgage payment that was due in like 2 weeks. And so that was the next day. I was super excited to head out to this house. And I'm driving to where this home is and getting closer to the area. And it's kind of around LAX and LA. And I'm turning around some streets. And I'm noticing that the homes are getting more disheveled as I get closer to this map, this on my old Thomas guide I was heading to. And as I turned finally on the street where the home would be, I looked and I just saw like a dead grass lawn and the setback small home. And like, oh, geez, I had that feeling like that. What am I doing here? This is not what I thought I was walking into. But I thought maybe it's not it, because there was like it said like 140 and a half on it. Maybe it's not a whole number. So I went and knocked on that door. And then three things happened in like 3 seconds. And I'll set them up for you that sort of changed my fate. And the first was the door opened. And I remember distinctly seeing a woman's face that was very tired, exhausted, almost malnutrition looking, and I'm that's maybe going too far, but she didn't look like she was having a great month. And this was the mom. And as I was going to say hello, the second thing hit me, and that was a smell of mildew, but not like a little mildew, like a really big, heavy dose of mildew, like unhealthy smell of mildew, which caused my face to pull back and recoil. And I started to retreat from the house, you know, but literally thinking how I'm going to exit. And as I'm trying to pull away, you know, with this fight or flight mentality almost, the third thing happens and I feel a tug at my finger. And what that was the daughter, the youngest daughter of this family, who was about 6 years old, and she had white toe hair, blonde hair. And I looked down, and as she was pulling me in, she had, in contrast to her mom and I, this big smile, you know, wow, I got visitors. And I don't think they had visitors very often. And so I get pulled through this crowded living room into this, looks like an undersized, maybe, you know, like unhealthy, like skinny hallway. It was a really skinny hallway. I remember like going sideways to go through it. And then she turns right. And she stands there and she smiles and she points up to this like My Little Pony poster on the wall. So I realize it's her room. But as she looks up, I feel that smell again. And I look down and I see four mattresses that she's standing between that have like moldy bedding on them. It kind of caught up to me later that is where the smell came from. And so I was in shock. It's kind of a good story when I tell it today, but I remember at this moment, it did not feel good. I felt trapped. I felt scared. I wanted to care, but I didn't think I could care because I felt like there wasn't enough at that moment. I didn't feel like I could do anything if I wanted to. So I felt trapped and I didn't say anything. And I stood there in this state of cognitive dissonance like that until finally the mom walked in again. And then when the mom walked in, I looked at her face again, which hadn't changed. And I don't know where it came from, but something welled up in me. And I looked at her and I just said, I'm going to take care of your roof. And I remember hoping that it just, you know, needed patching because I wasn't really experienced at laying down new systems yet. And also, I didn't think I had the money. And so I went up on the roof and it was shot. They needed a whole new roof. And I was like, oh, geez. And so, but there was, you know, I look back now, this was that cool moment now. I love shifting through old memories as you get older. Sometimes you see things you couldn't see when it happened. And this was my doctor on an airplane moment. You know, this was that time when, you know, when there's a doctor on an airplane and he and the pilot comes over the intercom and he says, you know, passengers, someone's having a heart attack. Is there a doctor on an airplane? I believe, and I bet most of your audience believes, that that doctor is going to raise his hand to help if he can. And I also believe, and I would bet that most of your audience believes, that after the doctor provides that life-saving service, I doubt he sends a bill. And so, in, you know, I think this is that moment. This is a really cool thing. In time looking back, we thought that we could do something because we were in the moment and we couldn't ignore it. Because if not me, a person that saved roofs, then who? And so that was a powerful moment. I went up on the roof. I was scared again because I didn't know if I had enough. And I got on the phone and I got 6 volunteers, and I needed volunteers because I didn't have employees yet. And then I went out to Home Depot. I remember, you know, I didn't have that strong account yet. I would have been too embarrassed to go to the roofing supply yard and to admit I didn't really know how to put on a system. But we went and we got a bunch of rolled roofing and a bunch of emulsion, and they laid down a layered roof. And I remember it was drippy. It was dripping on the outside, but that home didn't leak again, and the family stayed in that home. And that became a powerful thing for us. But we didn't know it for a lot of years. It became powerful because we sort of became this company that I would say, before we said we were keeping families safe and dry, I felt this way. I kept it quiet, but I felt this way. It's almost like, damn, I can't let anybody have a leaky roof just because they don't have the money to pay. So sometimes I don't tell my people, but we're not going to bill for that. But we go get them dry. We'll go patch them, get them dry. And I think that what happened, I didn't know it, but people, it leaked out that we did that. It leaked out that we did it. And I didn't know it, but we were keeping our employees because of it. I didn't know it, but our employees were high-fiving each other at the end of the week because of it. And then so I think it didn't really start to hit until after our give became more formalized. And that happened after a friend of mine nudged me for years to get involved with Habitat. And I didn't want to donate any more roofs than what I already was. I mean, I wasn't necessarily totally enjoying it yet. I mean, every time there's a roof give, every time to this day, when we get an ask, it often feels like it's, oh my God, how are we going to pay for it? But we've learned something with our stories looking back over time, that by being the company that doesn't say no, by being the company that says maybe, we end up opening bridges to all sorts of people and organizations, and internally and externally. And our people do stay because of that, as you mentioned. And also, if you read data that measures a purposeful employee against one that's not purposeful, then their work is better. If their work is 30% better, well, maybe that's a reason when we go out and look at these 30-year and lifetime roofs, other than them being over-specced or improperly specced on life expectancy. But there's a reason that a lot of roofs that should last 30 years only last 12 or 14, because every part on that roof, on that large condo, matters. And this purposeful component, we didn't know it, was being plugged into our culture a long time ago. This purposeful component, we didn't know it, was being plugged into our brand. It was being whispered about us when we were trying to make a difference in the community, even before we learned how to talk about it. So it became the most important thing, but it was disguised in the beginning as a burden that we couldn't help but not do, kind of the way that maybe my dad raised me to, you know, in the moment, do the right thing. And I always kind of was struck with that condition. You know, maybe originally it was fear, like fear of a punishing God, which I don't live like that anymore, but maybe that was why I did it. Maybe it was just like, God, I got to do it. There's a gun to my head. But somewhere along the line, it flipped into being passionate, purposeful. And actually, now that I understand the data and what's going to make a company thrive in this super adaptive world, it actually is very smart business to invest everything you can into your people and into the community, because things are only going to get more disruptive and adaptive. And it's really about keeping those soft skills and keeping empathy and critical thinking and emotional intelligence. I'm kind of just throwing a bunch of buzzwords in there right now, but really this new world is going to be so adaptive. We have to train for adaptability. And if you're going to train for being adaptive, you better spend a lot on your culture. You better find a way. This, I'm speaking far out language to a lot of contractors that are starting at $1 or $2 or $3 million, because I'm from that. And I know I am, but you got to just try to understand it. Like, we're moving into a world where you hear people ask you this. Sometimes to me, this sounds like such a BS question. Sometimes it makes me mad, but I ask it. And this question is like, hey, Charles, what's your why? You know, and it's like, you know, it's that Simon Sinek question. You have right. to have a why right. you exist today, or you're not going to be in business very long. And it bothers me when I hear that. But that's something that I would tell all your listeners to an exercise to play with. What if you every morning, and I know it sounds silly, but you got up and you made yourself say, what's your why today? You know, and then you tried to write it. And here's the thing. It's such a new context of thinking that even those of us that talk about it all the time, some days it hits us like, don't talk to me. I don't want to talk about my why. But in trying to talk about a why, and that means, you know, what does this all mean except for money? You know, money's not enough in the new world. It doesn't matter to clients. Clients need to see what you value, and then they trust you based on the alignment with what they value. But here's the hidden part. On them, it's not a conscious thing. They're not weighing it, well, let's see, they're in the habitat and I'm in the habitat. It comes subconsciously. It's a feeling. So everyone knows that really understands habitat, that everybody that loves Habitat for Humanity, which I'm on the local board in Orange County, we know that we believe this core philosophy that everybody deserves a decent place to live. And that resonates through our brand. So trust is built just by seeing the Habitat brand next to the Antis brand. Or if you're like our roofing industry, which I was, you know, I'm excited to talk about, that you've adopted, there's 200 companies that have adopted all of the Ronald McDonald houses in the country. And we know as roofing professionals that we think it is unimaginable to ignore sick children. And that's why we keep them safe, dry, and close at these homes across the country, all 165 of them. So these things show up. It's like in this new world, it's really weird, but who you are is going to matter more than anything. And I know these are all new words, but you have to try to understand it. People need to know you. They need to know your story. It needs to ring with authenticity. And there's a lot of ways that you can build toward that. And that's one of the reasons that LinkedIn is so important. If you were to fill out the full LinkedIn profile, like you said, like they'll tutor you through it, or have your nephew or your son or your daughter do it.
Yeah, it's easier call me. For them.
Mm-hmm. And just write on there. If you were just to write on there, like who you donate to, which school you went to. Now everyone knows that you go to ASU, for example, you build trust. So it's who all of your stories collectively build who you are. And that's how you're trusted today.
For those of our listeners that are going, yeah, this is all great, but you know, my job is to stay in business. I'm trying to do this. But what you're talking about is this is also good for business. That
yes.
This is how business should be run, and it's beneficial for your business. That sounds like really how you've grown your business and how you've had your people involved. And this is why you do have that huge retainage of your employees, because they are part of something. Also, I think when we're talking about bringing in a newer generation where so many of us are, these guys aren't worth a crap, you know, nobody wants to work. And I disagree. It's just different. You're going to have to take a different approach to recruit and retain this new generation, because they want to be part of something. They want to feel that there's more than just, you know, coming in here and working hours and getting a paycheck. It sounds like you have done just a fantastic job of this. And from what I'm understanding, this is one of the keys to your success. Would I be right?
Yeah. I mean, I go really deep on stuff. It's just a shifting world. Everything's changing so fast. I mean, roofing is the exciting thing about roofing, with the lack of labor and with the technology between robotics and drones and all of the different apps available, it's changing drastically. And how it's changing is going to greatly benefit the trade, although it's scary to a lot of us that grew up at a time when the biggest change of our childhood is when the rotary phone went to push button. You know, it's a little, it's scary, but you know, when you talk about millennials, I was at a family business thing recently, and there was a really, an old guy like me, he's a founder of a business, founded it 30 years ago, and his sons worked for his company. And he was, we were in a breakout session, and he was talking kind of like how founders talk, you know. Founders sometimes, you know, they know everything better than anybody, and you have to watch yourself. But he was talking, and he was complaining about one of his sons. And I remember I was worried that his son might hear him on a nearby table. But he was talking about how he gets in the, I get up at 3 every morning, I'm in the office by 5, and I leave at 7 at night. And, you know, and he talks about his other three sons that did something similar. And he said, but this guy, you know, he's probably not in there till 7. And I guarantee you, he's gone by 5. And so it was interesting when I know how he's thinking. It's easy to think that way. It's easy to get into that mindset. But the mindset that I'll ask you to compare is, it could be that son number 4 is the most brilliant son. Because we were raised at a time, whatever our fathers and parents did, us baby boomers, and this guy's a baby boomer like me, that if we just do it more, we can get more, but we're miserable, we're raping the earth. I mean, and I'm not trying to make a political statement, but we didn't think about the consequences of all our behavior. And the new millennials are just asking why. They're slowing down. It's a different way of thought. And at first they seem lazy, I admit it. But as soon as I changed my language in my company 4 years ago, and I started welcoming millennials, and I did this originally before I believed, I did it because I realized they were becoming the majority. And I realized if I could change my messaging, I would be able to retain them more. So when they came in and asked for things like a 980 getting every other Friday off, I'd say that's impossible. And I would insult them. I didn't realize it. And I wonder why they wouldn't stay. You know, today we have a 980 because we found a way to do it in the summer that keeps these people happy. And you know what I realized is that youngest son, he's the one who's building a healthier model. He's talking about a life balance. Because he's got a healthier mind and he's got a little more sleep, he's able to build in the newer technology maybe that requires a pause and not just a grind. So it's a different world. We have to economize it differently. And so all I'm saying is don't get caught in the mindset of doing it the way your father did it, because things are really going to change now. Like you said, if you're not involved in social media, that's a slow death. You're just waiting to die. You don't have to be good at it, but you have to, you know, enlist one of your younger relatives to help you have some maintenance where you do a couple of posts a week that somehow shows your people who you are and that your heart continues to tick. It's not that you necessarily need it in the niche where you're selling, but it does not, things are changing. Yep. And you have to become adaptable and you have to show your colors, just like, you know, one of the weird things I say, Dave, and I have to say weird things because sometimes it gets heard, but it's like, I know people have gone to prison and they've told me, and someone especially who didn't have a lot of past occurrences, that when he went to prison, he had to join a gang. And I know you'd have to join a gang. Yeah, you absolutely have to join a gang. And I eventually learned that if you go to prison and you do not join a gang, you're a threat to everybody because they don't know who you are, where you're from, what you're aligned with. And therefore, you're at risk to be stabbed at any moment. Once you join a gang, it all falls into alignment. And that sounds a little rough, and it is, but the same thing occurs out here socially. Trust is not built unless there is an alignment. And that's why who you belong to, that's why getting involved with nonprofits is important. And getting involved in a way long enough where you really do, it's not just an annual thing you show up and do, but you have a way that you get involved where you can talk about it authentically a little bit every month, hopefully a little bit every week. And then you can involve, you know, in donating your time and your talents and your influence on another brand. It's a really important time to do that because people need to know who you are. Last thing I'll say on that to make that point, and it's something that I like to talk about right now. It's hard to talk about again, but right now everybody's craving to know who you are in this world. And the reason people crave to know who you are, other than the kind of the prison rule thing I already gave, is because never in my lifetime have I seen so much spewing of inauthentic things. And it's getting worse before it gets better, or at least that's what the noise we see. And so that's why you hear about algorithms desperately trying to get built that will vet authenticity. It's never been more important to now. In China, 6 months ago, they announced that they're going to have a social good scoring system. And it's literally, if you're their version of socially good, you'll get a bigger house, you'll get to the front of the line. Well, they're doing the same thing in Silicon Valley. And I got to tell you, there is a currency of social good. You have to show how you're aligned. It's not like the old world when I grew up, when in Bible study, it was like, you learn, don't let the left hand know what the right hand's doing. So there's a lot of people that give roofs to the Ronald McDonald House across the country, but they don't want to talk about it. But my job is to tell them, bro, if we don't talk about it, how's this going to grow? How's other people going to do it? If Habitat didn't talk about it and take pictures of you, that framed wall going up, it wouldn't be the largest home builder in the world. So we're walking into this world where it is so visual. Who you are matters. That photo matters. It's going to matter more in the next 10 years than it matters now. And the last thing I'll say on this is I'm very visual. So imagine you're sitting in front of your PC and all of us are just little eraser head sized pictures. We're like shooting stars darting across your screen in every direction. It's like that little LinkedIn size eraser head picture of your face, of my face. And we're all craving to be heard. This is the currency in the new world. Like you want to be heard in your podcast. Like me, I want people to hear this thing that'll awaken them to greater purpose and passion. So if you have a high social good score, if you have high social good currency because you're aligned with authentic things that make the world a better place, then you're not an eraser head size dot shooting star across the PC. You're a saucer or a plate lifting at your own trajectory like a hot air balloon, and you're talking and everyone's hearing you. That's the world that you're coming into. I know it's a different way of talking, but it's happening. You know, how you are, what is it that you stand for? And it's important, because if you stand for social good, people can trust you. If you stand for social good, the people in your company will stay and they'll be able to lay down a better product. So it's just a really important time to stand for something in a world where people are craving to see flags and flags they trust. And it's a metaphor. People trust a little less than they used to. But American Red Cross, pretty high trust level. Ronald McDonald House Charities, pretty high trust level. U.S. Chamber of Commerce, pretty high trust level. You know, NRCA, pretty high trust level. Habitat for Humanity, pretty high trust level. Alignment really matters today, especially with involvement.
Well, I love it. But I can hear some of our smaller listeners. We're just starting off in business, just trying to keep my head above water. What can I do to make a difference? Isn't this only for large companies that have been around for a long time that can really put out all this money and contributions? Is that all it's for? Or can myself as a smaller guy, can I participate in this?
Yes, that's a great question. And I was totally forgetting where I'm from because I didn't understand any of this. In fact, I didn't understand it. I didn't feel adequate. I didn't feel like I had anything to offer as a roofer that they would want anything, nor did I think it could help my brand in any way. In fact, I felt that if this was ever talked about, I would either look stupid, gullible, or inauthentic, or like I'm trying to pretend I'm trying to be something I'm not. And I wouldn't want the detractors. I didn't want it. Maybe I should stay beneath the radar. So I know that thinking. And also, there was no time. There was no money for it. I'm just trying to survive. So yes, that's a great question. But so I'm going to tell you that the reason you don't do it is you don't have any bandwidth to even study it out. The reason Chevron, who has the largest philanthropy in the world, does it is they have billions of dollars invested in what tells them what matters in the world. So they knew 20 years ago that if they did this, they would retain their employees. We just start to figure that out now in the roofing industry, or at least at my company. So we don't know it because we don't know it. It's just out of our sight. But the cool news is if you're a big company, it takes a big spend. If you're a small company, authenticity shows up a lot easier. When I do panels with the big companies, they tell me, bro, you're lucky. I used to call myself a CSR crash. I'm not an expert on social responsibility. I'm a CSR crash dummy. And it was the senior VP of Chevron who called me on and says, Charles, you can't say that anymore. Dude, at your company, everyone believes at my company, not everyone's on board. In fact, he ended up going back to regular HR because he do it. So in a small company, you have an advantage because you can take your 20, 30 guys and you can do a habitat build that year. You can donate a habitat roof and have a moment that they'll always remember and meet the family, and it becomes real. And so what I'd say to a small company is, I'm going to give you a couple of corporate social responsibility. This is for culture and for brand. I call it inside out authentic branding. If it's just outside, it doesn't work. You need it through your people. But so let's, first of all, you need a cause that's near and dear to your heart. It has to be real and it has to make sense with your brand. One of my favorite organizations out there is MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. But that's not something, I'm saying this to make a point. But that's not something you'd want on your website necessarily every day unless you were California Highway Patrol. It doesn't line up well. But if you're throwing a big party and serving to 1,000 people, have MAD there. It fits. But let's talk about the brand that releases, that lifts who you are. We're aligned with Habitat for Humanity. Everyone knows that they build homes for people to give them affordable house to buy. People also donate time building that. That works with us because it's one of the most respected brands in the world, and we're providing roofing. And so it wasn't us, that we did not come up with the slogan Antis Roofing, donating roofs, transforming lives. It was Habitat for Humanity 10 years ago where we started donating all the roofs. We've donated all the roofs the last 10 years. We just hit the $1 million mark along with Eagle Tile. But when we started doing that, they said Antis Roofing, donating roofs, transforming lives. And that I thought at first, I can't say that. Don't say that. That's blasphemous. But it worked. Did some people criticize us? Some of our competitors said, "Aha!" No, I don't. Yeah, I'm exaggerating because I'm defensive because if a competitor says something. But they did. They said that's a gimmick. And what happened was, because we were really doing something good, even though we were clumsy in talking about it, the criticism is what really got people's attention. And then people started to pay attention. So what I'm saying is, be on social media, have a cause that's near and dear to your heart. Raise your hand and adopt one of the Ronald McDonald House roofs. We'll let you in. I've got three of them adopted. If you're in Southern California, yes, you can come donate the annual maintenance with me. And if we do a big re-roof, let's line our labor right next to each other, just like we did on the first give here at Camp Ronald McDonald House. But I mean, so you have that thing you're really involved with. It aligns well, and you talk about it a little bit every week. If you do that, your culture will go up, your employees will stay, and the nonprofit you're doing for will talk about you if you're not able to do it for yourself. But you need to make sure you're tied into a solid nonprofit with a solid leader, with a solid board. And if you're looking at the board, look at those board members. They should have something you want. I'm not talking about money, but they should have the traits that you want to be as a human being. Join those boards that lift, that are aligned with your purpose. Join the committees. You can't just go walk into a board. You have to be asked. But my point is, as you get involved and you start donating roofs, you will get asked to be on that committee. You will get asked to be on the board. And then you get to start to sit and think like these other leaders and other great industries in your neighborhood. And I can tell you that even though you're a roofer and you might see yourself as less, other people see you as those people, those experts that go up on the roof and do what no one else will do. Your engineers, your experts, your superheroes. I want you to see yourself higher. Get in there because they need your compassion and your big heart, which the industry, roofing industry, has the biggest heart. And I love that. But they need to see that. And so I the last thing I'll say is, I know the biggest detractor in this is you don't feel like you're enough, because until you get involved in these kind of things, you don't feel like enough. Or if you feel like you'll talk about it, that will be insincere. And I'm just going to tell you, and I'm going to reemphasize what I said earlier, you need to talk about your business. If you talk about your give, it will not blow up in your face, so long as you're really giving it. There's something weird about the world today because people are craving authenticity. It's people sniff it out if it's not real. But if you're really doing it, have no fear. So really do it. Talk about it goofy every week. And then, have a way that it shows up on your website. And then maybe have a way where you have a recap meeting and talk about the good you're doing internally. And that's, we might have an all hands on deck meeting, and then we'll talk about the good that we're doing, and people share and they break down, and sometimes people shed tears, and it's something I didn't used to see in roofing, and now I see it. And I got to say, at first it was awkward, but I tell you, it really fits. It's a big-hearted industry. Get involved in the board of the NRCA, and you go back to a meeting and they're passing Kleenexes around. You see these big macho cowboys all around the table try not to let anybody see us cry. You know, so it's a beautiful industry with beautiful people.
I agree. And there's so many things that can be done on a small scale, on a local scale. We were always involved with adopted a couple of schools type of things, some baseball teams that you can sponsor. Start off with some of these smaller things because there's a ton of them available in your community. Ask your people what they're interested in. Perhaps there's a charity that they would like to be involved with, and you can get everybody involved. But it's a great thing to do. We all need to step up and do more. And along those lines, now the NRCA, let's give a little plug for the NRCA and what we like about the NRCA. I've been a member for Stellam, God, I don't know, 40 years or so now, probably. Great organization. We've got the Alliance. You want to give a quick pitch for that?
Yeah, Roofing Alliance is the giving arm of the NRCA, and every member there has made a substantial pledge, and we use that money in trust to fund initiatives in the roofing industry to make it better. It was the Roofing Alliance that listened to the pitch by Bill Good to adopt all of the Ronald McDonald houses across the country, and it was in that meeting that we raised our hands and said yes, and now we're taking care of all those roofs. I mean, and also we're forming partnerships with youth services that are developing youth and bring skill into the roofing place with sometimes at-risk youth. This amazing initiatives come out of the Roofing Alliance. And the reason I'm part of the Roofing Alliance is I went back 3 years ago looking for the people that really cared. I went to the NRC. I went a day early to the Rebuilding Orlando give. This was in the Orlando conference a few years ago. And I showed up because I wanted to meet those people. I knew there had to be people. And I showed up. I met Heidi Ellsworth, who took me and introduced me to more people. I met Bill Good, all these people, Daryl and Monica from Dataforma, all these people that really want to make it a better place. And then I felt such at home when I met these people. And they looked at me and they said, Charles, has the roofing industry been good to you and to your family and to your people? And they said, yes. And they said, come back, give here. And I go, but Bill, I can't, that's too much. We do that locally. And he stayed with me. And pretty soon we made that pledge. And it's like, the more we give, you know, I've said this, I don't like to say it as a slogan, because if it doesn't rain, it's going to be tough to grow that year. But it does feel like the more we give, the more opportunity we have to grow, the better talent we bring in, the better retention rate we have. You know, it's like, I believe in that motto, you can't give too much. And it sounds crazy. You know, last year we didn't have much rain and it was an interesting year. Our sales dropped. And our giving went up, and we gave almost 5 points off what we sold. I don't think that's a good model. I'm not telling you that to brag or telling you that because it's the right thing. I think that probably in the whole history of things, we erred on the side of giving too much. But what a great place to be. Mm-hmm. What a great place to be socially investing in our people and the community in a way that we're protected in the way that the world is turning to. And if we go too far, we'll learn and we'll be able to share it. So we're really enjoying being a roofing company that feels more like a people company. We're really invested in our people being their highest selves and in our communities, you know, living its their longest life the best they can. And it's something about purpose. When you throw it into your conversation, it literally engineers safer and better work.
Yeah. Well, I think start small, but just get started because it does make a difference. And wrapping up, Charles, I can't let you go before I ask a couple of finishing questions. You run a very successful business. What can you offer our listeners? Just a couple of tips from the sage here. Any advice you can give for some of our contractors that are just starting off, maybe some of the smaller contractors, besides social responsibility, what's really helped your business grow and part of your success?
Well, I mean, I'm going to try to say this. I mean, yeah, I think right now, because of not from my path where I've been, it's more for the world we're going in and the path we're going. If you want to be successful, of course, I mean, most of the listeners here are great craftsmen. Craftsmanship is only one part of it, as you know, once you start your own business. So I think the most important thing is to really be and let your brand be authentically you. Be authentically you. Let you show up. Don't just be a roofer that has the lowest price. Have Some, you know, at Antis Roofing, people know that we care about the community and we care about things, and it builds trust. So be, how do you be your you that shows up? And I'm going to say, this is where I might go a little deep for some people, but I really strongly believe in self-assessments. Anything that lets you look at you and your people differently. And in business, if you want to get along, you need to understand business personalities. So anything like Myers-Briggs or DISC assessments or strength finders or imperative purpose, anything that goes, or emotional intelligence testing. If you want to be the best you you can be, you have to understand yourself. And the, quickly, I'll say, if you've ever done DISC scale, a DISC basically says, and this is Charles, the Charles Antis interpretation, but it says, and this, I'm going to give you a quick analogy. So if you're given a DISC analysis, this is how I'd say it. If you were an animal surviving in the jungle, you would survive one of these four ways, or maybe two of these four ways. Either one, you'd be the dominant alpha. If you're stronger than everybody, fight them, you'll survive. Number two, you'll be popular. If all the other animals like you, they won't kill you. The third and the most common is you'll be middle of the pack. If I stay in the middle pack, I won't get picked off. Or four, you'll be the most cautious. I'll only travel at dawn. So if you understand which of those two dominant styles you have, and me, I know I need to be popular. And sometimes I need to be in control. I need to be dominant. Once I knew who I was by taking that assessment, I stopped being embarrassed for wanting to be the center of attention. The first time I took a DISC analysis with a Vistage group, a bunch of business owners, the other CEOs looked at me and said, "Ha ha, Charles, you're a high I. You want to be the center of attention." And I said, "No, I don't." And then I quickly assessed and go, "Yeah, yeah, I guess I do." And then once I said, "Yes, I do," I understood myself better. I understood why I was better at sales and why I was better at customer care and why I was better at marketing maybe than managing the job. So you know, you'll understand your skills. I can hire a really good job manager. So if you want to be successful, understand you, understand your people, and you'll learn how to talk to each other. And then I want you to go deep on who you are. So, you know, whatever that means, go deep on who you are. It's going to matter more in the future than it does now. It's got to show up in your brand. On your LinkedIn, it should not only have your college, but it should show the clubs that you belong to. And I'm only going to make this point one time, but the clubs that you show will serve you better if they're clubs that everybody feels that they're invited to. So the club being Habitat for Humanity is going to have a higher a club version than maybe a political action club. I would stay away from politics on your brand. Politics should not show up in your brand unless you live in a 90% community where it leans one way. And then lastly, I said it earlier, you know, it's, if you're in business just to make money over the next decade, pack it up now. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
You have to have a why. You have to have a story. Tell your story. You know, and I can't say that with enough emphasis, even though I probably didn't give it enough emphasis. But you heard my stories today. You know why I'm in business. You know that I didn't have a plan when I started. You know that what mold smells like in relation to me, because we smelt it together today. You know, and I have a storytelling coach, that's why I'm talking about story like this. I understand story a little more than I did 3 years ago. But I can tell you this, nobody remembers data. I know this is counterintuitive, but this is another one of those things that smart sociologists will tell you. Stories are 30 times more memorable than data. So if you're going to give data, make one point. Say, we have a 91% retention rate. That's the only thing you remember at Antis Roofing is a 91% retention rate. But you're going to remember the stories. You're going to remember those stories. And so tell stories. And your brand will be remembered, and it will matter in the community. And if you matter in the community, you'll be around.
Totally agree with you, Charles. And it's that differentiation that you're talking about that's separating you out from your competition. You can see that. You set your clear on your position, your culture of your company, and that's what makes it different. And you got a great organization. Love the stories. You're so right about that. People remember and love to hear stories. So, Charles, I know you're going to be speaking at the Best of Success Conference. That's going to be September 15 and 16 down in, I believe, Miami. And everybody should really check that out. I'll be going down there, so I'll have a chance to say hi. And get involved. Get involved with NRCA. Get involved with your local communities, local organizations. It's all a great thing. Charles, for our listeners that want to get more information about you and get in touch, how would they do that?
Well, great. I'd love that. I'm active on LinkedIn. I probably do three or four posts a week, and my posts would center on nonprofit and industry related purposeful best practice stuff. And I would love to, if you followed me or reached out to me on an email on LinkedIn, or let me tell you my email address as well. My email address is charles@antisroofing.com. That's ANTIS.
Well, that's great. And go check out their website, because it's a great site. Give you some good information on how to run a good business with a clear message. And Charles, great talking to you, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, that's it for the show today. I really appreciate everybody listening. If you have a chance to leave me a review on iTunes, that really helps get the show out there, gets the word out, and I would really appreciate it. Until next week, we'll see you on The Roofer Show.